Hi, it's Tony Bruschi. When you're not enjoying our haunting episodes of The Grave Talks, I invite you to check out our true crime and disaster podcast, Dark Side of Wikipedia, with new episodes every Monday and Tuesday. Just search Dark Side of Wikipedia wherever you download podcasts. Now, here's a 15-minute preview of a recent episode of Dark Side of Wikipedia. From appearing in an infamous movie known for its rumors of death and tragedy to actually committing a crime of murder, the story of Paul Bateson is an intriguing one. What drove him to kill a film industry journalist? And was he involved in more than just one murder that he was convicted of? Today, the story of Paul Bateson on the dark side of Wikipedia.
Sometimes the human mind goes to dark places. Sometimes those dark delusions turn into a reality. A reality so shaded and gray, once all is said and done, the healthy mind is drawn into the documented retelling of these tragic events, trying to find logic, reason, and understanding where there may be none at all. This is the dark side of Wikipedia.
Paul Bateson is an American convicted murderer and former radiographer. He appeared as a radiological technologist in a scene from the 1973 horror film The Exorcist, which was inspired when the film's director William Friedkin watched him perform cerebral angiography the previous year. I'm sure I said that wrong. The scene, with a considerable amount of blood on screen, was for many viewers the film's most disturbing scene. Medical professionals have praised it for its realism. In 1979, Bateson was convicted of the murder of film industry journalist Addison Verrill and sentenced to a minimum of 20 years in prison. In 2003, he was released on parole, which ended after 5 years. Prior to Bateson's trial, police and prosecutors implicated him in a series of unsolved slayings of gay men in Manhattan. Killings he had reportedly boasted about while in jail, bringing it up at his sentencing. However, no additional charges ever were brought against him. The experience inspired Friedkin to make the 1980 film Cruising, which, while based on a novel written decades earlier, incorporated in its storyline the city's leather subculture with which Bateson had identified. In 2012, Friedkin recalled having visited the jailed Bateson prior to his trial and having a conversation which suggested that either Bateson had committed the additional murders or merely that he was considering confessing to them for a lighter sentence. However, there's no other record of incriminating evidence mentioned by Friedkin in that interview. Despite this, Bateson is often inaccurately described as a serial killer. As of 2020, it is not known if Bateson is still alive or if he is where he's living. Friedkin said in a 2018 interview that he had heard Bateson was living somewhere in upstate New York. Social Security record shows that a Paul F. Bateson, with the same birth date and Social Security number, issued in Pennsylvania, died on September 15th of 2012. So, today on the dark side of Wikipedia, an individual who is, you know, relatively unknown in terms of his acting career, unless you're really big into The Exorcist to know every which thing about it, which there's plenty of people there, and paid attention to the news at the time of that murder. Other than that, you know, probably this one would have gone out into obscurity. But a weird case nonetheless, and I find it kind of interesting because it adds to another layer of the whole Exorcist story. Because there's so many weird things that come out of that movie of people that were involved in things or had dark things happen to them. And it makes you wonder a little bit. But any recollection of Paul Bateson?
That's a hard no.
any wishing you knew more about Paul Bateson as a younger child?
Stands like a stand-up guy, would love to have mimicked my life after him. I want to know how, if you kill a person, mm-hmm. you can be up for parole.
That's what I'm interested in, that you actually end up getting released after killing someone. But
whether
it happens.
First degree, second degree, seventh degree. If your charge involves murder as someone not alive anymore, and you were the cause of it, why do you get to be a free person, whether it's 20 years, 30 years, 90 years? That's just things that make you go, hmm.
Well, a life sentence is defined in different ways. And I'm not obviously an attorney to know the answer to this. But 25 to life is a life sentence is essentially 25 years to life. Meaning from what if I'm getting this correctly, after 25 years, you can be up for parole. But the sentence is life, meaning that they can deny your parole. You can get a life sentence without the possibility of parole, which means it's not that would be a true life sentence. That means there ain't no getting out unless there's some sort of dramatic shift in the evidence of the crime that would require a new trial. But if you have a life sentence, period, and then there is the possibility of parole there, then there is a possibility of you getting out. And that's likely what happened here with the fine Paul Bateson.
I'm curious, what is a cerebral angiography?
I think you probably said it better than I did. I don't know.
Angiography. And let's see here.
I think angiography sounds better. That sounds a little more medical.
Images of blood vessels in and around the brain, thereby allowing detection of abnormalities such as something. Yeah, this is one of the more intricate intellectual murders that we actually have to find out what the hell he actually did.
Yeah. So we'll jump into the story. And first, let's learn a little bit more about the man and how he became a murderer today on The Dark Side of Wikipedia. Sit down, kids, get some crayons, and maybe color how you're feeling as we talk about
this. Hold on, popcorn. Oh, it's ready.
Here we go. Bateson was born on August 24th, 1940, and grew up in Lindsdale, Pennsylvania, the son of a... Okay, you got it. This one? I don't know. Metallurgist?
Oh, MacGyver.
I've never seen this title before, but we'll go with it. He would later suggest that this appearance in The Exorcist was revenge on his father for punishing him as a child by making him stay home from Saturday matinees at the local movie theater to listen to opera on the radio instead. He served in the Army in the early 1960s, where he began drinking heavily out of boredom while stationed in Germany, beginning a lifelong struggle with alcoholism. After his discharge, he returned to Lansdale and stopped drinking. In 1964, he moved to New York City, where he began a relationship with a man he would later describe himself as not exclusively gay, who he said was involved in music. The relationship was marked by heavy drinking, either in the form of cocktails at the Pierre and frequent parties at the couple's home, as well as weekends in the Fire Island enclave of Cherry Grove, both with food cooked by Bateson. 5 years later, Bateson's mother died of a stroke, and his younger brother died by suicide. Bateson trained as a neurological radiological technician and began working at that capacity. After the relationship ended in 1973, he moved to the Brooklyn neighborhood of Borough Park. He commuted from there to his job at New York University Medical Center, where he was well-liked and respected by his colleagues. In late 1972, film director William Friedkin visited NYUMC while he was preparing to make The Exorcist, the film adaptation of William Peter Blatty's novel of the same name. He wanted to view some medical procedures since he was considering showing some in the film. He was also looking for staff who might be willing to be extras in the film since he would be shooting interiors in New York, although the film itself is set in Washington, D.C. Dr. Barton Lane invited the director to watch the cerebral thing take place. At the time, such procedures were performed by puncturing the patient's carotid artery in the front of the neck in order to insert the catheter through which of contrast agent was injected in order to make the patient's blood vessels more visible under x-rays. And the moments between the puncture and the intersection of the catheter, blood freely issued from the tube mouth in rhythm with the patient's heartbeat. Fredricken was sufficiently impressed that he told Lane immediately afterward that not only did he want to depict the procedure in the film, he wanted Lane to be the one performing it on camera, along with the nurse, Bateson, the technician who recalled Lane in 2018 was the best he had ever had. A few months later, Fredkin and his crew returned to shoot the scene, blocking off part of the hospital's radiology department for two successive weekends. It was one of the first scenes shot during principal photography, in which the character of Reagan, Linda Blair, is examined medically to see if any of the strange behavior later found to be the result of demonic possession she's been exhibiting can be scientifically explained. Lane later recalled hearing that the crew was still trying to figure out how to make Reagan's head spin for a scene later on in the film. That, like the angiogram, became one of the film's best-remembered moments. In the scene, it is Bateson who speaks most of the dialogue, demonstrating the calming bedside manner, another attribute that drew praise from those who worked alongside that he had used with many actual child patients. He can be seen in the background early as Reagan is wheeled into the room, helping put her on the table and attaching wires to her shoulder. As the film shows Regan's face in tight close-up, alternating with takes of the procedure being finished, including her blood splurting into the air and staining her surgical gown as it had in the procedure, Fredricken watched. Bateson's voice is heard off camera instructing her, warning her that the carotid puncture will hurt, and reassuring her as he winces immediately afterward. Upon The Exorcist released at the end of 1973, the scene became notorious as the one that audience found most disturbing, despite its lack of any of the supernatural content that underlies the rest of the film's horror elements. Medical professionals, including Lane and the others involved in the scene, have also praised it as a realistic depiction of the procedure, a special historic interest since it is no longer performed with that carotid puncture, and one of the most realistic depictions of any medical procedure in a popular film. Around the time The Exorcist was released, Bateson's drinking again increased, adversely affecting his social life. "Nobody likes a drunk," he later told The Village Voice. In 1975, it affected his job performance, and NYUMC let him go. Bateson sustained himself with odd jobs, such as doing light repair work and cleaning in apartments near where he now lived in Greenwich Village, and taking tickets at a theater showing pornographic films. He also went to Alcoholics Anonymous meetings and was successful for a while in staying sober. He socialized with other recovering alcoholic gay men and was hoping to start another long-term relationship. However, by 1977, Bateson had begun drinking more heavily again. He said later that he was drinking at least a quart of vodka a day, which made him passive and curtailed his social life again. "After a few shots, I'd shave and get dressed, intending to go out, but then after the vodka, I had no energy left to move." One of those nights when he was able to get out, Bateson patronized leather bars, something he had started doing back in 1970 with a group that styled themselves as bikers. "Leather impresses me," he said later, contrasting it with drag and swish. "They give gays a bad name, like any extreme group would." Then on September 14, 1977, Addison Verrill, a reporter who covered the film industry for Variety, was found dead in his Horato Street apartment. He'd been beaten and stabbed. There were some signs of a struggle. However, nothing of value had been taken. Police believed that if the killer's motive had been robbery, he might have been looking for cash or jewelry, since those could be taken quickly. There was no evidence of forced entry. Verrill had likely let his killer into the apartment. There were several empty beer cans and half-full liquor glasses at the scene. Gay activist journalist Arthur Bell, a friend of Verrill's, wrote an article about the case in The Village Voice, setting it against the larger issue of how murders of gay men, several of which occurred yearly in the village, were rarely taken seriously by police or reported on in the media, since they were seen as results of sexual encounters gone wrong. The police, Bell wrote, had learned that Verrill had been at the Mineshaft, a popular leather bar, until about 6 a.m., talking to many other patrons. According to Bell, Verrill's friends said that while he did not seek the kink that was abundant at the Mineshaft, he nevertheless liked the attitudes of many of the customers. He was considered a regular, holding court at a corner table, not only at the Mineshaft, but the Anvil, another popular leather bar, and other popular gay bars of the era. His presence was seen as making those bars popular. ¶¶ So that's what we know thus far about Paul Bateson and his life and times. Thoughts so far on what we're diving into with this one?
So I think this guy, from a very early age, should have realized, hey, I want to be a phlebotomist. I believe that's what they're called.
Is that the word?
That work at funeral homes that basically prepare deceased for funerals.
Okay.
With the embalming fluid. And I mean, it sounds as though he definitely had an enjoyment of the just the procedure.
Enjoyment and, talking about skills,
all that
too.
Touch. So it sounds, as we so often realize, early childhood and such sick and twisted people usually very intelligent, usually have a love and a high drive for something. But this gentleman, rather than doing such harm, man, he could have, if somebody guided him in a little bit different direction, could have done a lot of good opposed to what he did.
That's the preview. If you want to hear the full episode, be sure to subscribe to Dark Side of Wikipedia wherever you download podcasts and get new episodes every Monday and Tuesday. That's Dark Side of Wikipedia.